Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Two Portland boys are burned after playing with gasoline and chemicals. Bees swarm a downtown Max stop, and a Montana power outage is caused by falling deer.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when we began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed for this. This is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, June 17th, 2011. A 12-year-old was burned with gasoline and a 15-year-old with chemicals in separate incidents Thursday in Washington County. The 12-year-old boy was taken to Legacy Oregon Burn Center with serious injuries after he tried to melt plastic army men with paper and gasoline. Tualatin Family Fire and Rescue crew said the boy was playing with friends in the driveway of a home on Southwest 160th Avenue about 8 p.m. A passing Washington County Sheriff's deputy driving by saw the boy was on fire and called for firefighters.
That's the sort of thing that would get your attention, I guess.
Bystanders put out the flames, according to fire spokesman Brian Barker.
Must have been a slow-moving fire.
An hour earlier, a 15-year-old was mixing chemicals on the kitchen stove to ultimately create large amounts of smoke, Barker said. The chemicals ignited, burning his arms. There were no damages to the home.
When you say ultimately to create large amounts of smoke, that wasn't his whole plan, right? It wasn't just like, how can I create smoke? He must have had some larger aim than that. Otherwise, it seems like you're over.
I don't know. It sounds like that was his plan, smoke. Also, I think we all melted plastic army men in our day, and that's what God gave us.
I just don't know that I did it like Tyler Durden style.
I know that's
magnifying glass.
I was searching for the word. That's why God gave us a magnifying glass.
Maybe he couldn't come up with the word.
Right.
Do we have one of those things?
Oh,
what is it? One of those things? I don't know. Let's make napalm.
I'll just pour gas on it.
Yeah. Well, problem solved.
So this piece ends with a little words of wisdom. From Tualatin Valley Fire and Rescue spokesman Brian Barker. He said, any parents who suspect their children of pyromania can contact specialists at the Juvenile Fire Setter intake line.
Or you can...
at 503-259-1408.
Or just put them in a cage. How creepy that there's actually a full, like a full-on specialized and dedicated telephone line just for people who are out there with piles of animal bones setting things ablaze.
Well, it is one of the first warning signs, really. But I had no idea there was a juvenile fire setter intake line.
That's what I'm saying. It must be something... Well, there must be some fork in the juvenile road, too. There must be some place where you stop becoming a budding sociopath and... or start becoming a budding sociopath and stop being just like an average, you know, like jackass kid. Because everybody sort of... Everybody is at least fascinated with fire, even if they're not setting fires. But then I think the rest of us kind of move on to, like, I don't know, reading Soldier Fortune magazine and dry humping. And, you know, and then but some kids are like, no, I'm just going to stay here and burn stuff if it's all the same to you guys. And then just sort of licking his hand a lot.
Yeah, I always wonder what it would have taken to tip me over into that. If my parents had been just maybe a little bit more psycho and a little bit worse than they actually were. Because it's like I have the childhood checklist. It's like I never actually tortured animals, but I did like put my cat in the shower once and turned the shower on. And I did shave it kind of partially once. And I had the bedwetting and I had the fire setting. And so it's kind of like I wonder what it might have taken, you know, to just kind of tip me over, you know, into Bundy land.
I think a more interesting question is, could we do it now?
Oh,
I mean, really? If
possibly,
you know, just the right combination of circumstances could actually result in sort of a late blooming sociopathy.
Maybe it may just be all just simmering under the surface.
That could be our big summer promotion. You are listening to Legion of News here at
Psychopath Summer.
Exactly.
On the Emerson News Network.
Beat me to it. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday, June 17th, 2011. Coming up later on this hour, you got your entertainment news. Also, science on the march. you can take this program with you if you like, wherever you might travel in this world of ours, at mobile.cascadia.fm. That is mobile.cascadia.fm. You can also get it via iTunes later on today as your direct MP3 download here, or Legion of News.com. And don't forget, coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Today we'll be joined by Mr. Big Jim Willig. He'll be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101, also a clown watch. That is all on the way. You are listening to Legion of News. Here is Don Taylor.
A Sherwood mother charged with the murder of her 11-year-old daughter pleaded not guilty in court Thursday. Christina Buckley, 38, has a history of psychological problems. According to court documents obtained by a local news agency, she experienced a psychotic episode just days before her daughter's death. The body of Cecilia Buckley was found on the living room floor of her home late in the afternoon, June 2nd. Autopsy results later showed she had been strangled. Sherwood police found Christina Buckley had locked herself in the bathroom and had self-inflicted wounds to her wrist and neck. The arrest warrant said that Buckley confessed to police she strangled and killed her daughter to save her from pedophiles. According to a Washington County arrest warrant, Buckley made the confession during an ambulance ride to St. Vincent's Hospital, where she was taken for treatment to her own injuries. Court documents said at the time of the confession, Christina told police, "I know that Cecilia was being abused. I see that now. I was trying to kill both of us. Obviously, I failed. I'm not strong enough. I would have killed my husband if I was strong enough." Dr. Frank Calistro, a forensic psychologist not involved in the case, said the study show 20% of parents who kill their kids are acutely psychotic. He said a lot of times within the perpetrator's delusional system, they think they're doing a good thing. A woman who told police that she is a registered nurse was arrested in Eau Claire County, which I believe is Wisconsin or something. She was arrested for huffing. Tara Cohen was found unconscious in her car with the engine running in the parking lot of an Eau Claire office supply store in May. Employees said she had purchased a can of aerosol keyboard cleaner a short time earlier. Police ended up finding 43 aerosol cans in her car. They say Cohen told them she was in town for a nursing convention and had learned about huffing from watching Dr. Phil.
So this is is it spelled Eau Claire like E-U or E-A-U or whatever?
Yeah.
So I guess maybe there's not a lot to do in Wisconsin. I mean, it is sort of just endless acres of just cows and gray sky.
You're in town for a nursing convention.
I mean,
you're a little bored.
What are you going to do? So they arrested her. What I said is she goes in, she buys the stuff, she goes to her car, can't wait to get home, immediately pops the top or whatever it is you do, passes out. Somebody comes by and says, "Hey, somebody passed out." They call the cops. The cops come.
Engine was still running, so someone said, "Something's wrong here."
The cops show up and they say, "Hey, ma'am, is everything okay? Why, what's this?" And then in the car are 43 cans?
43 aerosol cans. I'm assuming already emptied of their... whatever it is you inhaled.
Did you say that she was in town for a nursing convention?
Yes.
So I wonder if she, well, she must have driven there. She must not have flown. Otherwise, that's a lot of aerosol in just a couple of days.
Unless it was a rental car, but probably not.
No, I mean, and so what is the stuff that's even in there?
I don't know.
Because it's just compressed air, but I guess I always thought it was, you know, compressed air, and it was compressed, which is why it sort of came out when you press the top.
Well, I think it's, I don't know. I'm no expert on this thing, but I think it's the same thing as like with whipped cream or whatever. It's the
nitrous oxide
or whatever that's creating the pressure.
See, I always figured that they just somehow like vacuum packed a bunch of air into there, and that it was as simple as it sounds, where they had pressed the thing and the air had to get out because it was a high pressure system inside.
No, you still need propellant.
I don't have any idea how that works.
I don't either.
Okay.
I didn't know that you could use a keyboard cleaner for honestly.
You really, that's a thing. And I haven't done it myself, but that's a thing that you hear, you hear like dirtbags talk about all the time. And you will see reference to that on the Intertron sometime. You're like, so yeah, we'd been up all night because we ran out of lewds. And so then we were just like going through the cupboards. But then we found like a thing of compressed air that his dad used to clean electrical supplies. And radio stations have that stuff around all the time too. It comes in a can, looks like WD-40 with a little red straw on the end of it. You know, so you can aim it into a keyboard. Because the other thing they use it to clean off like a motherboard. Or back in the late 1980s, early 1990s days of satellite, there were these things called CDAT. These CDAT satellite boards that you would have to take out and you would have to clean every now and again, because if they got any sort of dust on them, then they would increase the risk of electric shock or of static, and then the whole thing would blow out. And that's exactly what. So there were cans of this, cases of it everywhere. And not unlike how in every walk-in cooler in every kitchen in the world, eventually you just find a case of Ready Whip that doesn't want to whip anymore because you just press it and it goes... Because Paul, the line cook, has just been over there just going, I gotta go get some more snow peas. I'll be right back. And then, you know, he comes out with a huge smile on his face. There was always just some dirtbag jackass DJ that was like, I gotta go buy, I'll be back. And then he would just, you know, and then he put on Inagata DeVita and vanish into the workroom, you know, and come back and, you know, having huffed the whole can of that stuff. So
the whole huffing thing just kind of, always baffled me. And I say this as someone who has tried most kinds of drugs and is frankly in favor of recreational drug use, as long as, you know, you don't get in trouble for it. But the thing is, I don't think I ever inhaled anything out of a aerosol can per se, but I did try nitrous a couple of times and that sort of thing. And all it does is just make you feel like your brain is swelling up inside your head.
Well, that's my thing.
And then it goes away, and then you go, wow, I just killed brain cells.
Doesn't it just give you a headache?
And it wasn't even that fun.
Like, I picture it just giving you a migraine afterward.
Yeah, it was just like, wow, that was probably bad for me, and lasted like 10 seconds and what didn't even really feel good.
Like whenever I think about huffing anything, I think the closest I ever came to huffing was like, I don't know, like in seventh grade when we all inhaled helium because it made you talk funny. I
get a little lightheaded from that, from lack of oxygen. That's not really actually, you know.
I always just imagine that it feels a lot like spinning around on the lawn until you vomit and fall over.
Now, my experience was it literally just sort of felt like the inside of my head was expanding and pressing against my skull. And then just feel a little bit kind of dizzy. And just go, wow! And you'd be really, really sort of woozy and dizzy and spinny. And then it would go back away again.
But not expanding in the cool Aldous Huxley kind of way.
No, and it's, you know, yeah, so I don't understand it.
Kids, don't do it. Don't be retarded.
Plus, it's really bad for your brain, and you need your brain to you know... be able to like take care of yourself later when you're old.
Seriously, unless you want to work at, you know, like a recycling center for the rest of your life. Yeah. You just don't do that.
A Montana resident says an energy company has identified the cause of a brief power outage as, quote, deer with wings. Lee Bridges says she was outside with her dogs around the time the power went out when a Northwestern Energy truck pulled up, giving her a chance to ask the driver what caused the problem. She said he pointed up and said, apparently we've got deer with wings. Bridges looked up and saw a dead fawn hanging on a power line. There's actually a picture of this. I put it in the Dropbox so we can post it. It's unlikely the animal had an accident while trying to, you know, actually fly or something. Bridges suspects that an eagle was carrying it and dropped it.
Okay, this is like
and couldn't retrieve it.
Third eagle story we've had in the last couple of days that ends with some sort of horrible, like a thing being picked up and carried away by said eagle. I'll get this posted here. But it was, so this must have been either a really large eagle or perhaps Quetzalcoatl. Or a very small deer.
It's a fairly small deer, but at the same time,
I couldn't lift it.
It could probably be a very large eagle as well. The lineman said he's never seen anything like it. So,
all right, there you go. Let's see. All right, and we'll get this posted. By the way, you are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Coming up next hour, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio for the Rick Emerson radio program at RickEmersonShow.com today, talking about Mr. Ed O'Neill as part of Humor Me Comedy 101, America's Father. It's Ed O'Neill next hour. Big Jim Willig will be here. We'll also have another Clown Watch and so forth. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
The British magazine Monocle has named what they believe to be the world's most livable city. Can you imagine what it is, Rick Emerson? Can you?
It's not Portland, Oregon.
It is not Portland, Oregon. It's Helsinki.
Oh, I thought, well, okay, the world. I guess
yeah,
when
the
I was,
whole world.
I guess I somehow just mentally inserted, like, you know, here.
Oh, no.
The nation.
No, British magazine.
Oh, well, yeah, of course it's going to be someplace in Finland.
Yeah. They took a look at the number of urban centers around the globe. The magazine bases its annual top 25 list on a variety of factors, aiming to find the city that's the best to call home. Helsinki moved up four spots from last year's ranking, beating out Zurich at number two and Copenhagen at number three. The full list will be published later this summer. Helsinki only has about 600,000 residents, allowing for a tight community and a certain Finnish way to do things that remains intact despite highly influential global trends. Helsinki is also spared some of the problem of urban sprawl that many other cities have, allowing for easy escape to one of the many islands off Finland's coast. Finnish design also had a lot to do with the selection, as would be expected from an international news and design magazine. The magazine writes, "An unorthodox but well-deserving champion, the Finnish capital stands out for its fundamental courage to rethink its urban ambitions and for possessing the talent, ideas, and guts to pull it off."
You know, the thing about, you know, is Finland apparently has a fairly low population. Sweden isn't really packed with people either. Sweden also... Here's the thing about Sweden, is that Sweden has one of the highest standards of living in the entire world. They're right up there with Kuwait in terms of just average income per citizen. They also have, by mandate, high-speed internet into every single public or private dwelling in the country. So if you live in Sweden and if you have a home, whether it's a government home, whether it's your own home, if you have an office building, the government actually mandates the existence of and furnishes for your use high-speed internet. They were one of the first nations in the world to have an almost 100% penetration of broadband internet access. They also have a 100% literacy rate, which yep. I guess is easier when you only have like 9 people in the country. But I mean, still.
They also have excellent health care. And meatballs.
Also, here's the other thing. Because they have so much goddamn money, and because everybody is apparently just sitting around, I don't know, just wearing a lot of immaculate white sweaters and brushing their teeth, they have a huge, huge, huge competitive video game. I don't even know if the word is industry, whatever, but it's sort of infrastructure for video game competitions as actual sport there. There's a fantastic book by Jason Rendell called Game Boys, which is all about the world of competitive Counter-Strike players and guys who actually make their living playing Counter-Strike. And he talks a lot about Sweden, where if you look at the Swedish versions of things like Sports Illustrated, there will be on the front just some, of course it goes without saying that he's pasty, but he's like doubly pasty because he's in Sweden and he's a video game player. And they will have on the front of Sports Illustrated magazine, the Swedish edition, some guy with an Xbox controller in his hand because he's like the national Counter-Strike champion. So it's just the strangest, weirdest, coolest place. It seems like a hipper, more sex-crazed, Vulcan. You know, but like here on Earth.
Yeah. And then, well, I can imagine the video game things, probably. They have very, very cold winters. So, but you can also, I wonder if they sit there and they play their video games, then they get all sweaty, like as if they were in a sauna, and they strip off their clothes and run out and like just douse themselves in the snow and then like run back in and play more Halo.
I don't know, but I imagine there being just hot blonde babes giving them massages all the time while this is taking place. That's exactly
I believe that
how
is exactly what happens in Sweden.
So I'm just saying. You know, like if you need somewhere to run or defect, or if you get a lammet somewhere, you know, you could. Here's the more interesting.
And everything in the entire country can be put together with Allen wrenches.
The more interesting thing about this story to me, though, is not about the standard of living in Sweden or you know the Helsinki and why it's such a great place for you to raise a family or whatever. It's what seems to be wrong with the brains of everyone on planet Earth that people think Helsinki is in Sweden. If you go poll 100 people on the street right now, 85 of them will tell you that Helsinki is in Sweden, and I don't know why. It is one of those things that almost everybody gets wrong, and they get it wrong in exactly the same way. Not even if you gave them the option. If you just said, what country is Helsinki in? Everybody says Sweden.
Well, we are very, very stupid, at least here in the United States.
See, but it's not stupidity. Because if it was stupidity, they wouldn't have any guess. They wouldn't know. Or they would all guess different countries. If you ask people where Helsinki is, they will almost unfailingly say Sweden. So that is not where they're dumb. They're all getting it wrong in exactly the same way. And I want to know why that is. It fascinates me. I have thought about that for years.
Really?
Yes.
You've thought about that for years.
I have. It's because there are certain things that most people get wrong in exactly the same way, and there's no real explanation for it. So, I'm just saying. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
New York could soon become the latest state to legalize same-sex marriage. Polls over the past decade have shown a major shift towards acceptance of gay marriage in the U.S., but legal analyst Jeffrey Toobin says that doesn't really matter.
We're not governed by polls. We're governed by courts and by legislators, and they have not moved on this issue, apparently, as fast as public opinion has.
Byron Beck is governed by polls.
He's surrounded by polls.
Yeah.
Toobin says who can wed is traditionally a state issue.
Historically, there has not been federal uniformity on marriage. In fact, marriage has been one of the subjects that is very much reserved to the state in terms of how it's administered.
By the way, in states' rights, while inherently a good concept, I suppose, have also become a watchword for crazy person, which is why we all cringe a little now whenever we hear that phrase. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday, June 17th, 2011. Coming up next hour, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio for the Rick Emerson Show at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
The Los Angeles Times reports that there is an ongoing virtual clash between LulzSec and Anonymous. It began when one of the groups, Lulz Security, tried to bring down the web servers for three popular online games, League of Legends, Minecraft, and EVE Online. That move left members of the more widely known hacker group, Anonymous, fuming. In the wake of the attack, members of Anonymous, many of whom are active on the internet message board 4chan, appear to have begun circulating an online flyer calling for people to out members of LulzSec or alert the FBI of their identity. As would be expected, LulzSec didn't take too kindly to this. In a tweet earlier this week, the group acknowledged it was aware that Anonymous was behind the effort and then followed up with a message implying that it had launched a denial-of-service attack on the web company that hosts 4chan. Anonymous prides itself on what it considers an activist agenda and has recently hacked the websites of the Turkish government in support of freedom of speech and the websites of the Malaysian government in an apparent bid to punish it for censoring WikiLeaks. LulzSec has also used its hacking talents to come to the defense of WikiLeaks, breaking into PBS's website to post a fake news story claiming that slain rapper Tupac Shakur was alive in response to a Frontline episode that was critical of WikiLeaks. But the group has also displayed a tendency to pull internet pranks for no apparent reason other than lulz. This week, the group opened a phone line to take requests on which sites to target next.
By the way, if they really want to impress anybody, they should do something to China. I mean, I think that's... Here's the thing. I think it stopped being, I'm not saying that I could do it, but I think it stopped being impressive when you're just taking down Sony for like the 100 millionth time. Or when you're just, you know, who was it they were screwing with the other day? Magnets.com by just flooding their support lines with people going, how do they work? I think if you really want to impress the rest of the world, you just take on China. It's like, here's my thing about the LulzSec and the Anonymous guys. And again, it's not like I have the ability to do anything they're doing. But it was like when Marilyn Manson was trying to get a lot of headlines by tearing up a Bible. You know, it's like you want to impress me, tear up a Quran. If you really want to be a badass, if you really want to show me just, you know, how unafraid you are of backlash, how unafraid, because, you know, you tear up a Bible and what happens? You get coverage in MTV and you sell more records and everybody forgets about you. If you really want to tell me, you know, show me that you are unafraid of, you know, of religious tyranny, you tear up something that'll let you get you beheaded. So that's my thing with these guys. If you really want to impress me, why don't you pick on a country that has no problem just liquefying you and sticking you in a cell for the rest of your life and flogging the soles of your feet every 5 minutes until you die? I mean, that's, you know, I think that would show a little, that would show stones, as they say. That would show intestinal fortitude.
Indeed it would.
Yeah, so I'm just saying, you pick on Creedy with the black bag and then we'll be impressed.
A swarm of bees, some 8,000 of them, swarmed at the 6th and Madison Max stop on Thursday. The swarm appeared about 1 p.m. and it doubled in size several hours later.
Where is this?
6th and Madison, downtown Portland.
Wow.
Milwaukee beekeeper Jim Barlian says this is swarming season. From May through June, bees have produced so much honey they've outgrown their hives and create sudden conventions or caucuses to deal with the problem. Passersby pulled out their cell phones and cameras. One mother grabbed her daughter and ran quickly away while someone else yelled, Oh my gosh, my gosh, it's huge.
Please tell me that there's video or footage or you know, charcoal sketches or something.
There's got to be, because KXL Radio first reported it, and I'm sure like people were pulling out their cell phones and using their and shooting it with, on their little cameras on their cell phones and things. So there must be pictures online of this somewhere. The Barlian, the beekeeper, says they really do discuss this. The scout bee comes back and says, hey, I've got location A to go to. And then another bee says, how about this place? And then the group decides, and all of a sudden they take off together.
Did KXL Radio note that they were swarming downtown instead of getting a job? They were just hanging out on the corner waiting for somebody to come by and give them money.
Hippie bees trying to take our jobs.
Exactly.
Anyway, that's what they did. They swarmed. They look around. They tried to decide if that was a good place. They decided, nah, it's a max stop. Let's go. And they were all gone by 5 p.m.
Okay. Well, that's an unsatisfying way for that story to end.
Sorry.
All right. No, no Michael Caine, no nothing.
No.
Fine. You were listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Somebody says, when he was in Salt Lake City, didn't Marilyn Manson tear up a Book of Mormon? He did indeed. When he was playing at the Delta Center, it came out, and I think he tore up a Bible when he was with, he was opening for Nine Inch Nails. This is back in, like, 95, 96. So he didn't actually get that, but that was during Reznor's set, when Manson came out as one of the guests. He actually didn't get to, progress to the next stage of his act, but then he came back a few weeks later, and he played this tiny little club called the Vortex, and he did, in fact, tear up. But the thing is, like, you tear up a Book of Mormon, it's like tearing up a Gideon Bible. It's like they just roll those things off the assembly line. You know, what's one more or less? I mean, really, it's not gonna, let's see. It is, what time? 12:25. That means that we are about 25 minutes away from your entertainment news, and you're about 45 minutes away from the Rick Emerson radio program. You're about 4 seconds away from hearing more from Don Taylor right now.
Oh. Disgraced former Congressman Anthony Weiner has resigned because he sent lewd pictures of himself and later lied about it. But don't count him out when it comes to a possible political return. Oh, no. Dan Abrams, founder of the website Mediaite, gives this Weiner prediction.
Does it really say that he's giving a Weiner prediction?
His Weiner prediction.
Okay. Did you add the don't count him out, oh no?
I added the oh no.
You added the oh no. Was it a Macho Man tribute?
Oh no!
Okay.
I've been working on that, by the way.
I'm sorry. Give me the setup one more time.
Dan Abrams, this is his Weiner prediction.
I do think that he will be back in New York City politics within 3 years. He will have a leading role, I predict, in New York City politics. I'm not saying he's necessarily going to be a married man. I have no idea.
Here's the thing that irritates me about the whole Tony Weiner thing, is that, to my knowledge, and maybe I'm wrong about this, I mean, it's not like we didn't sit and talk about the story. We do, because clearly, tweet, penis. It's ready-made hilarity. But unless I am really missing something, which is always, like, possible, I don't think he actually broke the law at all.
No.
I don't think he was even accused of having broken the governor of the state was just sitting there just nailing whores on his office desk. And I think he's actually got a gig on CNN now. So,
no, I
you
think
know.
This is purely because the Democrats are really super, super touchy and concerned about us being able to, like, you know, win in the 2012 elections. It's like we've got elections coming up next year. I think that's all it is. You know, I mean, come
tidying
on.
Tidying up loose ends.
Are you really, really at all surprised that guys, that politicians are having sexy talk with ladies? Or, you know,
that's what the internet
going
is
to
for.
Whores?
I mean, really?
Or putting them up in apartments and buying them cars? I mean, don't we just assume that they're all doing this?
Well, I mean, why do you think God made money? I mean, really, if not to put whores in apartment buildings and to buy them shiny objects, I mean, really, why would any of us have jobs? What would be the point?
It's a pretty safe bet, though, that Weiner is going to end up, like, sort of laying low for a couple of years and then coming back to politics, if only because he has absolutely no training in anything else. Unlike a lot of guys that go into politics, he doesn't have a law degree. He apparently has never, ever done anything except public service.
I like him.
So he has nothing to fall back on.
We should see if we can hire him as a spokesperson.
Maybe.
You know, have him be our PR flack or the public face of the Emerson News Network. I'd be... Ooh, I was getting like a little Darth thing there with my...
Ooh, with your water bottle.
Anthony Weiner, would you like a job? Or perhaps just to have lunch sometime.
I'm sorry, is this Dick Cheney?
I didn't know I could do that. Okay. Yeah. Here's Don Taylor.
Okay. Constituent Ed Corrado says he was sorry to see it come to this.
I believe he was sincere. Unfortunately, he tried to resign with dignity, but wasn't allowed to, given the presence of someone in the audience. That hurt even more.
Well, yeah, the someone in the audience, by the way, being...
Is this the Stern course, guy?
Yeah, being Benji Brunk, who's a guy from the Stern Show, who was heckling the congressman so loudly that he nearly drowned him out on multiple occasions.
It's telling, by the way, that nobody thought to just eject that guy.
No, no. Apparently, among the things he was yelling were, bye-bye, pervert. Were you fully erect? The people demand to know. Are you more than 7 inches? And will you maintain your hot physique?
Well, yeah, because he has even more motivation to do that now, because clearly that wife of his isn't going to be around very long. And also, I mean, what does he care now? I mean, what could he possibly do? He could just be waving his penis around inside an adult bookstore at this point. And it seems like that ship has sailed.
Although apparently, the Examiner, the newspaper, the Examiner, says the pervert comment was actually another heckler. It wasn't this guy.
Well, it did degenerate, as they said, into heckling and chaos toward the end, which is not just the Howard Stern guy. Apparently, he was the instigator, and then everybody just sort of piled on.
Well, here's another constituent named Kobe Neumann, who says, it's about time.
It was long overdue. I mean, it's a little bit of a disgrace what he did. And if the politicians can't keep their private affairs, in their private spectrum and bring it out, he should have resigned a while ago.
I will say this. The one legitimate claim you can probably make for the fact that he needed to go or to resign is that once they ask, I mean, and I, you know, it's not like anybody would just go, yes, it's my penis. I was sending it to everyone. But it's that once they actually just said to him, so... Are you tweeting your penis everywhere? Just tell us. And he said, no. You can make the claim that once he started denying it, then it just became a waste of taxpayer dollars.
Yeah.
Because nothing was getting done, and we were, in effect, just giving him money, or they were giving him money, to do nothing. I mean, that's probably the only claim you can really make there, but,
Well, and the whole ethics thing of the lying.
Well, see, but I don't care about that. Nobody cares about that.
No, but, I mean, I believe, though, that that's a legitimate thing. To ding somebody for if they're in the public eye.
But I think everybody, I mean, when I say everybody, I don't mean all politicians. I mean, no one gets through the day without lying.
I realize that, but I mean, in a specific case, when you've been caught doing something, that's the thing. It does count against you. In the case of politicians, for right or wrong, for some reason, we do hold them to a higher standard of conduct.
Which is retarded. It's like the other thing. It's like, how on the one hand can we think politicians are scum and then logically hold them to a higher standard? People are stupid. Really, honestly, not just his constituents, although specifically in this case, they are. But, I mean, just people in general are just dense. I mean, really, I think it's that politicians have got it way more figured out than the rest of us do. Because you don't see politicians holding anybody to a higher standard. They know the reality. They know that everybody is a moron. So,
well, up
no
until the point somebody gets caught doing something, and then they all act very shocked and appalled.
I'm appalled.
And it's like, I'm sorry, you have to resign now because you did that thing with your penis. And we're shocked
yeah.
that you would do that.
No sense at all.
Yeah, so.
Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do science.
Hooray! Here's your Science on the March for whatever the hell day this is. Friday, June 17th, 2011, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them at squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric. You can also call at 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. If it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or business, they can make your life easier and better. They can make it more stress-free. They can help to alleviate any of the tension you may, like a long virtual neck rub you may feel about the wires or the wiring setup at your place. So if you got to have something upgraded, repaired, installed, if you have something checked out, if you're going to be selling your house to somebody else, you're going to be renting from somebody else, you want to make sure that everything is on the up and up, as they say, you can have it looked into by Squires Electric. They'll give you an estimate up front so you know about what it's going to cost you. And they have been in Portland for about 15 years now, and they are good people. So good enough to wire the studios of the Emerson News Network, good enough for your home or business. Find them at Squires Electric. .com. Here is Don Taylor.
A 3-year-old. Where are we going? Somebody wrote this as like a blog post. Let me see. I hate people who do that. If you're going to write a news story, write it as a news story. Here we go. Let's start again. There was news this week that a 260-pound Mekong giant catfish was caught by Welsh fisherman David Kent in Thailand. The angler had baited his hook with a mere piece of sweet corn, and it took him just an hour to reel it in. Cant 54 caught the freshwater fish in November at Gillam's Fishing Resorts in Krabi in Thailand, on the west coast of Thailand. It took until last week, however, for the fish to be declared a world record as the largest catfish ever caught.
And it's how big?
260 pounds.
How long is that, do they say?
There's a picture.
Okay, I'm looking here, by the way. The only picture I see in the Dropbox is one of a... there's just a picture of a black man.
Oh,
that's all that's in here right now.
Apparently, I didn't drag any of the photos this morning.
There's a picture of Trevor Ray Lofton.
Well, hell.
Trevor Ray Lofton! Quit, you're being the only picture in the Dropbox! That's all, I don't see anything
else. It's a fine picture of Trevor Ray Lofton, though, definitely. There's the huffing nurse, there's the flying deer. All of those things are in there now, so.
Really? Okay.
Well, they'll take a moment to show up, I think. Gillam's Fishing Resorts also produced the two previous record holders for this species. One, caught in 2008, weighed 184 pounds. Another, in 2009, weighed 191. Gillam said there are fish in his lake that exceed 300 pounds, and that he has recorded growth rates among his fish of more than 50 pounds per year. Cant's catch, which measured more than 7 feet long, it's a catfish more than 7 feet long, was set free after its official sizing up. And, I guess it's swimming around, living another day.
It wasn't speaking to Billy Crudup?
No, it's doing that thing where it's going back and going, dude, you're not going to believe what happened to me. The other fish are going, you're crazy.
I've had the worst day. Okay, so this is real? This has been confirmed? Because
yes.
I'm looking at it right now. You can see this, by the way, at... there's the huffing nurse. She's a beady-eyed bastard, isn't she? Let's see. You can see this at rickemerson.com/pictures. Visual aids... For June 17th, that is rickemerson.com/pictures, visual aids, June 17th. Okay, that's huge.
Yeah, it's 7 feet long and 260 pounds.
Jesus God almighty. That's really larger than it needs to be.
Yeah.
I mean, strictly speaking, the catfish
that's
shouldn't
like
be that big.
That's like two of you.
I mean, how would something even get to be that big? I mean, it seems like that's a... Okay, that's one of those things where you're glad it's an aberration, because a whole ocean full of those things is just a terrifying concept.
Yes.
Okay. Jesus.
In April, 8-year-old Jocelyn Caldenberg of Iowa became the first kid in the U.S. to receive an expandable humerus bone replacement, a landmark procedure that saved her arm from amputation. Just a few months ago, it seemed inevitable that Jocelyn would lose her arm to the cancer that had invaded the bones of her upper arm, elbow, and shoulder. Thanks to the first-of-its-kind funny bone replacement, she is now back coloring, writing, and playing the piano in her Iowa home. "I like my new arm a lot," says Caldenberg, who is fiercely proud of the 12-inch scar that now graces her upper arm. The only downside, the family jokes, is that Jocelyn has to get patted down at the airport as her bionic bone sets off metal detectors.
Wait, so they replaced her bone with it, so it's like a... It's metal or it's a polymer or it's...
It's metal of some sort, and it's also expandable. So as she grows, it will...
She's got a go-go gadget arm.
Yes. Yes, she does.
That's fantastic.
She was diagnosed with osteosarcoma in November, which is a rare bone cancer that affects only about 100 children each year. It's a tumor that takes over the long bones of the arms and legs, destroying bone tissue and spreading through the body. So decades ago, the only treatment was amputation of the limb. But even then, the prognosis was poor. Now, the combination of chemotherapy and artificial or cadaver bone transplants can save the limbs, possibly. But it was very rare to do this in children because their bones are still growing. So now they have put in a expandable funny bone in her arm. And as she grows, they'll be able to, like, make it longer.
Doesn't it seem like we've failed that we can't make some sort of joke about an expandable funny bone?
Well, we've been making a lot of jokes about bones lately, so
I guess.
Maybe we're just tired.
That's true. All right.
Jelly Belly has teamed up with ESI Cases and Accessories to make smartphone cases that smell like jelly beans. Jelly Belly fans can choose from strawberry cheesecake, very cherry, blueberry licorice, and berry blue scents. There's blueberry and berry blue. That doesn't make sense.
Does this seem like a thing that people really want? Was there a big demand for that? You know, my cell phone doesn't smell quite enough like elderberries.
The cases are not edible. They are version...
People are so stupid. People are so mind-bogglingly dumb. Please do not eat this cell phone case, you stupid goddamned American.
They're available for the iPhone 4, iPod Touch, iPod Nano, and select BlackBerry phones. ESI couldn't resist adding some earbuds to the line of Jelly Belly products. The in-ear headphones are shaped like Jelly Belly jelly beans. They aren't scented, but they do match the five colors of the scented cases.
And because you haven't specifically noted that they can't be eaten, it's just a matter of time until we find an ER story of them trying to fish earbuds out of some guy's rectum.
Elliot Azoulay, president and CEO of ESI Cases and Accessories, said in a statement, "These jelly bean-shaped headphones are ideal for any consumers that want to make a fun impression with their friends and as they walk down the street."
Okay. All right. So there you go. How much could the thing possibly smell that you would be able to smell it just on somebody as they were walking by? And wouldn't that get in the way of any other scent you wanted to have on?
Yeah, no, and it would be distracting, I would think, that you would just like be going, "I'm going to use my phone." Oh, it's got to be for like 12-year-olds or something.
Maybe.
You know, it's
all right.
It's creepy. And then finally, stem cells taken from human noses can help repair damaged mouse brains. In people, stem cells continuously divide and replenish odor-sensing nerve cells in the nasal cavity. When researchers implanted these human cells into mice with brain injuries, the cells traveled to the site of damage and settled in, dividing and producing new nerve cells. This was reported by French researchers in the Journal of Clinical Investigation. What's more, brain-damaged mice who received donor human nose cells performed better on learning and memory tests. These nose stem cells may also be able to repair brain injuries in humans and would be free from the ethical considerations that plague embryonic stem cells.
See, that doesn't make any sense. It's like, that's when I was a kid, I used to be weirded out by like how the aspirin knew where the headache was. And so, like, how does it the nose cells become brain cells? I mean, that just seems like magic. I know it's not. But that's one of those things where you realize how little we know about science, because it doesn't seem that shouldn't happen.
And then the next thing you know, you're like going, "Wow, it's like I can smell it with my brain," and you don't know why. And
I'm just freaking me out. Shouldn't say that. All right, is that the end of science?
I can smell my iPhone case with my brain.
I can smell the colors. It's amazing.
That's all the science.
All right, there you go. There's your Science on the March / LSD News, brought to you by Squires Electric. You can find out more about them at squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609 or facebook.com/squiresElectric. While you're there, please give them a little thumbs up. Like them, if you would. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program today, featuring Clown Watch and Mr. Big Jim Willig. He'll be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101 today, talking about Mr. Ed O'Neill, America's Dad. Here is Don Taylor.
A Vancouver photographer captured a pair of people that looked like they were making out on the ground in the middle of the Vancouver riots in what has become a fairly famous photograph. The Globe and Mail reports that the pair in question is an Australian, Scott Jones, and a Canadian, Alex Thomas, who've been dating for several months. The photo of the couple, which was taken during the riot, quickly became an internet sensation and fueled a speculation that it was staged or photoshopped. According to Jones' mother, that wasn't the case. She said the couple was at the game and got caught between police and rioters as they were leaving. Thomas was knocked to the ground by an officer's riot shield, and Jones leapt to the ground after her to comfort her and was kissing her when that photograph took. Jones' mother said, "I just thought, yep, that would be Scott, because he's a bit of a dreamer, and he wouldn't have even known there was a riot going on around him, quite possibly." The photographer said he initially snapped the photo thinking it was someone hurt and looked back and thought someone was injured, shot that, and then framed it, you know, and kind of cropped it and juxtaposed it with the policeman. It wasn't until the editors were sorting through his digital images that anyone realized just how weird and amazing the shot was.
Okay, but have you seen the guy getting the flashbang grenade to his junk?
No.
Oh, my God! Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not.
Okay, that's the next thing you're going to watch. So wait, was it the same riot where this photo was taken? And it's a cop shooting a flashbang grenade into the crowd. And at the wrong moment, or right moment, depending on whether or not you're me, a guy moves slightly. The flashbang grenade, here's the thing, even describing it, it won't ruin it for you because it's so mind-bogglingly great. The flashbang grenade hits the guy in the junk just as it explodes. So just a huge, it looks as though someone has taken one of those, like, shower of sparks, fireworks from when you're, you know, 4th of July, where it's a big cone that just goes and just sprays a big fountain of sparks everywhere. It looks like one of those is in his pants. And the guy's kind of going, "Ha!" Ah! And meanwhile, there's just a huge fountain of sparks coming out of his crotch.
Jesus.
It's awesome. It's so much like the best thing you've ever seen. And it was at the same... So really, this riot has given us already two fantastic images. Did you put the image... Is that in the Dropbox by chance?
Yes, it is.
So you can see that at rickemerson.com/pictures. Visual aids for June 17. I'll find the flashbang guy. It's wonderful. It's glorious.
A Tualatin school has a new mascot thanks to an uninvited visitor from the woods earlier this month. The black bear that had wandered down from the mountains, then played around, on the schoolyard, and everybody got evacuated before it was tranquilized and kicked back to the woods, captivated students, apparently, who watched the whole thing unfold right outside their classroom. So on the last day of classes Thursday, the Tualatin Middle School, or whatever school that is, officially changed their mascot from the Tualatin Panthers to the Tualatin Black Bears.
Okay.
Yeah, that happened. Greece finds itself in the midst of national financial crisis. Jacob Kierkegaard of the Peterson Institute for International Economics says the U.S. really needs to worry if Greece's problems spread to other European nations, especially Spain.
A lot of
Spain.
A lot of our banks here in the United States and financial institutions here have a lot of exposure to Spain.
What kind of accent is this? It sounds like he has a little bit of a weird sort of...
A lot of our banks here in the United States and financial institutions...
And it's gone.
...here have a lot of exposure to Spain.
Is that like sort of a Fargo thing he's got going on there? I can't quite tell.
I don't know, or it's some kind of a Scandinavian thing?
A lot of our banks here in the United States and financial institutions...
Well, he says here in
here
the
have
States.
A lot of exposure to Spain.
It sounds very much like he's sort of got a Minnesota thing happening.
Kierkegaard says the U.S. needs to hope that Greece ultimately gets another bailout from the European Union.
We should certainly hope for Europeans putting European money to work to solve a European problem before it becomes our problem as well.
Well, okay, so that guy said that.
Yeah, that happened. Anthony Weiner, speaking of Congressman Anthony Weiner, he's been offered at least two jobs since he accidentally tweeted a picture of his crotch and confessed to having online affairs with several women. In a letter dated June 16th, Hustler publisher Larry Flint offered the disgraced politician a job at Flint Management Group.
Awesome.
Flint demonstrates a surprising amount of self-awareness, repeatedly stating that the job offer is not a joke. A letter reads in part, "As a congressman, you are known for your intensity and perseverance. I believe this attitude, combined with your service in the House of Representatives Committee on Energy and Commerce, will make you a valuable asset to this corporation."
See, so, you know, as always, Larry Flint one step ahead of me.
Yep. The job would be in Flint Group's internet division, which is a bit surprising given that the Weiner scandal erupted because the congressman seemed unfamiliar with the nuances of private messaging on Twitter. To prove his sincerity, Flint offered Weiner 20% more than his congressional salary, and to sweeten the deal, he promises to cover the cost of Weiner's relocation to Beverly Hills, which is where Flint Management Group is
located. I love Larry Flint. I really do, just with everything in me.
And also, the Hollywood Reporter said that before the congressman resigned, Entourage executive producer Doug Ellen offered Weiner a chance to play himself on the show.
I did see that, actually. See, here's the thing, like, I don't understand why one of these guys, like, you know, your Tiger Woods or your Anthony Weiner or your any of these guys who just get busted because they apparently just have, like, no or little control over their sexual impulsivity, why they don't just get, like, screw it, and then they just go work in porn. Maybe not even on camera, you know, just, like, working in the porn industry somehow, just like, I'll be a gaffer. You know, it seems like that's a sort of thing. That's sort of a do what you love kind of a turn to take halfway through your life.
And once again, there's money there.
Seriously, is there ever, Don?
Yeah.
All right.
Let's do entertainment news.
Let's see. Here's your entertainment news for Friday right here at Legion of News.
Tom Hanks' wife, Rita Wilson, will serve as the editor of the new Huffington Post site, HuffPost 40, which debuts in August. AOL Huffington Post Media Group President Arianna Huffington said the site will appeal to people over 40 and center both about news and about people sharing their own experiences about that stage in life.
Yeah.
There is no mention here on whether they are actually going to pay the people who write for the site. Matthew Broderick is headed back to Broadway for the ranted comedy Nice Work If You Can Get It. The musical, which comes out next spring, will feature music from George and Ira Gershwin. Broderick has previously worked on Broadway musicals The Producers, Brighton Beach Memoirs, and How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. The Beverly Hills mansion, built by late TV producer Aaron Spelling, has been sold to British heiress Petra Eccleston. The property has been listed on the market for $150 million, and the real estate brokerage firm Hilton & Highland would not confirm the sale price until July. Nick Hexum, frontman for 311 or 311.
311.
311. delivered his daughter Maxine sans medical help, reports Us Weekly. The 41-year-old and his wife Nikki scheduled a midwife to assist in Maxine's home birth, but after Hexum delivered the baby himself when Nikki went into sudden labor on May 1st, I don't know why it said when there. The couple also have a 21-month-old daughter named Echo. James Mangold will direct Wolverine 2, the sequel to X-Men Origins Wolverine. Yes, that's going to have a sequel.
Okay.
Black Swan director Darren Aronofsky was originally set to direct the film, which was one of the most interesting things I've heard in years.
Wasn't Wolverine, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't Wolverine actually like called X-Men 3 at one point? Wasn't there the poster had like the adamantium claw marks and it spelled out a 3?
No, X-Men 3 was different. That was X-Men 3. Wolverine.
Well, there has X-Men been an actual Origins, X-Men 3 since then, right?
Right.
But when Wolverine came out, I thought that they were marketing it as the third. Well, maybe it's not. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Anyway, Mangold directed Night and Day, which was actually pretty good. But still, Aronofsky would have just been a very interesting
choice.
It's
a strange choice, if nothing else.
I know. Kate Winslet and Josh Brolin will star in Labor Day, a movie based on the 2009 novel by writer Joyce Maynard. The story centers on a single mom who falls in love with a convicted murderer. It'll be directed by up-in-the-air filmmaker Jason Reitman. The Amazing Race has been renewed for a 20th season, which debuts next year. Season 19 of the show premieres this fall. 20 series of
yes.
that. 20. And finally, I know that you have been following this breathlessly, Rick Emerson. Jennifer Aniston and her new boyfriend Justin Theroux are living together.
The last thing I heard was that she had dumped whoever it was she was with, but maybe not.
No, she hooked up with him, and he dumped his girlfriend for her.
I see.
Apparently.
Okay.
So he's living at her place in L.A., says a source, and she's introducing him to people as her boyfriend. Theroux, who worked together with Aniston on the movie Wanderlust, recently split up his girlfriend of 14 years, costume designer Heidi Bivens.
Here's the thing. I mean, you know, it's not like Jennifer Aniston doesn't have much to recommend her, but she does. Jennifer Aniston just seems, it seems like that is a relationship, no matter who you are, that is a short shelf life. Seems like the expiration date on any coupling she has with any man is, you know, can be calculated in days, not weeks.
I don't know. Okay. I'm just baffled by the constant fascination with her love life.
Well, it's because we all want her to get a boyfriend and have a, you know, or get married and have a baby and settle down so we can quit hearing from her about how she needs to meet some man but can't really find anybody. And then asking, what do you think about Match.com? And we go, we don't know, Jennifer. We're busy over here. We have this country economy to fix. And also, you know, we have three different wars. Okay, but I mean, what about this guy? He says he likes cats. Do you think he's lying? And we're like, Jennifer, I don't know.
Why her specifically of every actress in the known universe?
Sandra Bullock finally got married.
Okay. That's all the entertainment news.
Because Jennifer Aniston, as corny as it sounds, because she is endearing and does seem relatable in a weird sort of like, you know, like your older sister / like platonic girlfriend kind of a way. I mean, you know, for whatever reason, I mean, that's just a certain kind of charisma that she has that certain people do have where the public gloms onto you in a specific kind of way.
Well, is it just purely because, like, she was with Brad Pitt and everyone went, oh, wow, my God, they're so awesome together. And then Angelina Jolie stole her man.
No,
And now it's like, we just need Jennifer Aniston to be happy.
No, it's the other way around. We acted that way about Brad Pitt dumping her because we already felt that way about her, which is just, and again, I don't think there's anything specific. Specifically that she did to create that feeling, but I think that they're just like there are actors and actresses that we sort of, you know, that you kind of love to hate because they're sort of, you know, scruffy or they're anti, you know, they're anti-celebrities or they're anti-heroes or they're caddish or whatever. She's just like, you know, she's just like the really nice chick across the hallway from you, you know, that is always, you know, always over and kind of talking to you about how she went out with this one guy, but then she found out that he was, you know, wasn't really divorced. He was just separated. And she thought he was divorced because he seemed really nice. And then she got along really well with his kids. But she doesn't want to be the girl who dates a guy who has kids because then it's like it's going to be confusing for the kids. And so she stayed there a couple times. Then she just didn't feel right about it because even though the separation's been going on for a long time. Do you have any ice cream, by the way? Do you want to go out and maybe we can see a movie or something that I can tell you about this guy? Because then he introduced me to a friend of his who I think might also be separated, but it sounds like his wife lives in California, and if they're living in California and I'm living here, then it seems like they might really be kind of divorced, right? Because then they're not even living together, and so it's not like I'm breaking up the marriage, because I don't want to be that girl. And you're just sitting there going, that's really great, Jennifer. Look, I've got a computer over there. Maybe you could just go pick guys at random out of the phone book and leave me alone, okay? And that's kind of how the whole country is with her. So we follow it because we want it to be over.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Are we done there?
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Thank
Here's
God.
Your. There's your entertainment news for Friday, June 17th, 2011. Here is Dawn Taylor.
Students at Big Bear High School in Big Bear Lake, California, are being asked to return their yearbooks after the discovery of an explicit photograph on one of the pages. The photograph in question was taken during a school dance. Investigators were notified Tuesday, and school employees and detectives began collecting the yearbooks. A spokeswoman for the Sheriff's Department said the couple is in the background of the photo at the dance and went unnoticed by the yearbook advisor. Apparently, it's they're dancing, and he has, I guess, his hand in her pants
okay.
or something. It doesn't say in this one. A different story I read other than this was that that his hand was inside her clothing, and it looked as if there might be penetration.
I don't understand. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Oh, not in the shirt.
Yeah.
But down the end.
Yeah.
Okay.
Detectives are contacting students who haven't turned in their yearbooks with a warning that they could face a charge of possessing child pornography.
Wow, that's awkward. Okay. You know why this is done? It's because they're playing too much R. Kelly at dances these days.
Kids these days.
Exactly.
With their tight pants and their rock music.
Not tight enough, apparently.
Apparently not. A county inspector in Bethesda, Maryland, ordered the Marriott and Augustine children, a pair of children in Augustine, Maryland, to shut down their lemonade stand that they set up on Persimmon Tree Road. After they allegedly ignored a couple of warnings, the inspector fined their parents $500. Carrie Marriott, one of the kids' moms, said, "This gentleman from the county is now telling us because we don't have a vendor's license, the kids won't be allowed to sell their lemonade. The kids can't seem to understand it. I don't agree. I think the county is wrong," says one. "We're sending the money to charity," said another. Jennifer Hughes, the director of permitting for the county, says it's technically illegal to run even the smallest lemonade stand in the county, but inspectors usually don't go looking for them. She said this one was unusually large. She also said they warned all kinds of other vendors they couldn't operate. By the way, it was selling lemonade outside the U.S. Open.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. That seems like one of those things where
and
the parents...
And it was unusually large.
Well, and the parents don't really understand that they're being done a favor there because God forbid that the kids make something wrong or one of the kids, you know, doesn't quite sponge up correctly after using the bathroom and then somebody gets sick from drinking the lemonade and the parents get sued out of house and home. So really, $500 is a small price to pay versus, like, the massive liability that you might face if your kid poisons somebody.
So, yeah, and so apparently you can get a permit, by the way, to let golf fans park on your front lawn.
Yeah.
That costs about $300, but then you can charge people $60 a day to park their car on your lawn. And some neighbors rake in tens of thousands of dollars during golf season.
Well, that is the American way.
But the kids aren't allowed to sell lemonade, which, like, who cares?
Well, and also, by the way, it should be noted that it's from, unless I'm missing something in the story, that the man, the county health inspector, whoever they are, the vending and licensing department, didn't come by and, like, roust the kids. They went to the parents.
Yeah.
And said, "Hey, by the way, you should probably let your, you know, we're telling you now, find some sort of, you know, find some gentle way to break it to your kids that they're not going to be able to sell lemonade anymore."
Yeah, you have to shut this down.
So it's like they did the responsibility by telling the parents. So it's really the parents' inability or unwillingness to actually man up and face their children and tell their children they can't have something they want.
Yeah, and one of the parents, I love this, this is the last line in the story, and this is just so awesome. Carrie Marriott, one of the parents, is having a hard time reconciling the two different perspectives on entrepreneurship at the U.S. Open. She says, "The message to kids is, there's no American dream."
Oh, that's awesome. That's wonderful. That entire story has made my week, really. Let's just go out on that.
Okay.
I don't know that I could have an even larger smile put on my face at this point. It seems impossible. Coming up next hour at BrickEmersonShow.com, Mr. Big Jim Willig will be in the studio with us with another installment of Humor Me, Comedy 101. Also, we'll have a clown watch coming up today. And it's about, 25 minutes or so from now at BrickEmersonShow.com, following a brief musical interlude, which will, by the way, in honor of the Ace Frehley 1978 solo album on vinyl brought to us by Thomas Gill, we'll begin the musical interlude with a little way to cut from that record. So that is all coming up here in just a few. But first, there we go. Excellent. We now bring the curtain down on this, another exciting episode of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milk Packing District in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon, At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Egler. Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on Monday. Have a good weekend. Bye now.